The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 89. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 89, as submitted by Senator Emmerich, an act relating to veterinarians, providing requirements for veterinary technicians as specified, providing for state certification of veterinary technicians, providing rulemaking authority, providing a definition, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, whom was referred Senate File 89 engrossed veterinary technicians, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Semlich, Winters, and Dan Zwanzer, signed by Representative Semlich, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Semlich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 89 do pass, and I will explain the Senate File to you. Senate File 89 sets up a certification process for veterinarian technicians in the state. This is done in 33-3301 through 33-3305. There's four new articles that are in there to set up this process. 301 starts off with state certification, what is required. You can see the new language there as to what stipulates what a registered veterinarian technician can do. They have to work underneath a licensed veterinarian. The requirements for certification are found on page 2, beginning at line 10, 302. File an application. You've got to be the age of majority. And then there's kind of that boilerplate language in there on Romanet 2, no felony or misdemeanor conviction. That sort of thing. Page 3, Romanet 3, the applicant has successfully completed an accredited program in veterinary technology as approved by the board, in this case is the Board of Veterinary Medicine, or has training and experience which the board has determined is adequate. This Senate file came to us during the interim work along with the as a part of the Veterinary Practice Act bill that we discussed before lunch with the Euthanasia Board, and I know myself and perhaps another member or two of our committee had a little bit of a concern about how an applicant could be certified as a vet tech. This indicates in Romanet 3 to have to complete an accredited program in veterinary technology. We thought that was fine, or at least I think most everybody thought it was fine. But I didn't know if that would be enough, really, to bring in the very competent and capable men and women that we have working across the state right now who are assisting veterinarians in their practices, whether perhaps they didn't have they haven't completed an accredited program, and yet I think some of us kind of want to provide some other way that they could be certified. So that language comes in on line 4 by saying the board be approved by the board or has other training and experience which the board determines is adequate. So we'll leave that up to them in the rulemaking to see what those criteria might be. Going on down Romanet B, could require the applicant to appear before the board, examination of all credentials, may consider credentials adequate evidence of professional competence, issue a certificate. Then supervision goes back to say that these technicians, certified technicians, can only work under the direction or supervision of a licensed veterinarian. And then let's see, I guess it's some reciprocity on page 4, some reciprocity language rulemaking is provided here for the certification process, and then some definitions as to what a veterinary technician is on page 5, and a penalty in there in 214, which is already in existing. I can just tell you that the good senator from down the hall, who is a practicing veterinarian, brought this to us, and he just said there was a desire among the folks that are assisting veterinarians now to have a certification process where they could kind of be recognized for their contributions to veterinary medicine in Wyoming. And there's certainly, I guess there's 35 other states that certify vet techs, and with that certification, then they could probably join with others around the country and regional or national meetings and get ongoing education and things such as that. So I'll tell you, there wasn't anybody that showed up in the committee that testified for that, you know, as someone who is currently working at the vet, but no one showed up to say they didn't want it either. Mr. Chairman, is Senate File 89, and we'll see if I can answer some questions, if there are any.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and appreciate the presentation of the bill. My concern really stems from what's going to happen through the rule and regulation process. I know a lot of veterinarians in my area use people that are not necessarily vet techs. Sometimes they're kids that help in a spaying operation for part of the year or various other sorts of activities. My concern is I don't want to see anything in this act prohibit that from being able to continue. And without knowing what the rules are going to be, it's difficult for me to make a judgment on it.
Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the good Chairman of Ag. And I guess I'll make a comment about the last question first, if that's appropriate. There is a provision, 33-30-203, Romanet 9, that would still allow a veterinarian to employ a person, not as a veterinary technician, but as an aide or other designation to perform whatever duties they would want him to do. But I understand the concern, and I too, first of all, I understand the desire to recognize the training and the contribution that these folks bring to the profession that I practice, and many of you take it, receive services from. I have two questions, and I don't know if they came up in committee or not. In the past, I know this body has been asked to consider whether certain obstetric procedures, such as the palpation of cows for pregnancy, could be accepted from the practice of medicine. And I'm wondering if there was any testimony regarding the ability of a veterinarian to direct a veterinary technician to go out in the field and provide those obstetric services in the absence of the veterinarian, if that was any part of the conversation, because it looks to me like if I were to look at this, I might be willing to interpret it that I could, as a licensed veterinarian, ask for that to be accomplished on my behalf by a certified technician. The third point I would make is on page 433, the 305 rulemaking authority, it just gives the board rules necessary to implement this article, and I only actually find two things that requires the board to make any determination. That would be an educational requirement, and then I apologize. The reciprocity requirement. Other than that, I don't see where there's any interpretation needed. So I'm just curious if there's any discussion about what the rules would actually entail if the board decided to proceed with rulemaking. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Simluck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was not, in regard to the last part of the last question, we did not have any discussion with respect to, other than what the good representative brought up, some rulemaking for education requirements or the reciprocity issue, we did not have any discussion beyond that. And furthermore, we did not have any discussion in regard to the good representative Kamakani's question about can vet techs then be directed, you know, to go out in the field and do obstetrics work. We would assume that the confines of the vet tech will remain with what's already in the Practice Act, although the person who asked that question would certainly probably better understand that than I would. So that would be my response to those two questions. To the good chairman of education, I tell you that was one of the things that held me up from throwing my full support behind this bill until I kind of realized that going back into page 2 where it says no person shall practice. Line 4, no person shall practice as a veterinary technician unless the person is registered by the board under this article. It's mincing words, I suppose, but it's certainly not contemplated that I can see here that no person can could not continue to assist a veterinarian, but just not, you know, not have that certification you know, behind their name or on the wall. I don't think that the language that I see in here would limit that. And I, in fact, in the conversation as this bill was coming up, from the good representative from Camel County, was, I think, some interest in making sure with an amendment that might come on second reading to add on page 3 under subsection C, I think it is, on page 3 to say notwithstanding the provision of this article, this would not prohibit anybody from assisting a veterinarian in the way that they do now. So that was somewhat of my concern, that this was not a fencing out bill. In a lot of discussion in the committee, I had that concern, but I wasn't convinced after hearing the testimony that was the purpose of this bill, nor would the provisions in this act really prohibit someone from continuing, who did not want to be certified, to continue to assist a veterinarian in doing the things that they do now. If someone continue has some concern about that, I think, you know, we could address that through an amendment process in specifying that that's certainly wasn't the intent.
Chairman Teeters.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess my concern lies in the fact that the reason why we pass practice acts is to protect professions so that other people can't come in and do the same thing without the certification. That's why we pass practice acts. And so if this practice act is written in such a way that other people can come in and do the same thing, I'm not sure why we need it. That would be my first comment. I'm leery of it because I think even though we may interpret it that way, or we may write into law some notwithstanding language to continue to allow people to do things that this practice act may specifically delineate, all it is a matter of changing the rule, and then all of a sudden I can't assist my vet while he is spaying my neighbor's cattle, for example, and get compensated for that. I think if we want to recognize these people, we ought to find a better way to do it outside of giving them their own practice act. If this is really just about recognition, then I don't see the need for it.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm in the same category. I don't see there's any added responsibilities. It's just a recognition. I just can't see that we really need this. I was waiting for one of the members of the body that always gets up and opposes these state certification and making new, but I guess I'll take over there and just say I just don't see the need for this. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, or Chairman Simlick?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just restate to kind of what the testimony was, people who are working as assisting veterinarians now just felt like they want to be part of a group that is now recognized in 35 other states to have that certification. I understand the good chairman of education's concern to a point in that when we do practice acts or when we do certification, it normally leads to licensing, and then when licensing leads to regulation, I would hope that the language is clear enough in the bill, and I would hope if it isn't that we could do something about that. And it also would be my suggestion that we move this thing along just simply because the request has come from the folks that are working out there in this practice. I think it defines what the purpose of it is. I don't see it moving into a regulatory program as such, and if this was what people who are working as vet techs want in terms of a certification for that recognition, I guess I don't see where that would create any problem with the veterinarians or with the livestock people or the small animal practice that they serve. I just don't see really where the problem is.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I sat in the committee and we listened to this bill, and there are a couple of ways you can receive the credential. One way is to go to a two-year junior college degree is one way of getting it. There's also a four-year degree that he discussed. This one adds another layer where the veterinarian, a person working for the veterinarian, receives, I guess, like certificates of accomplishment. When they're competent in euthanasia, they're allowed to do that under that veterinarian's license. Preg checking was also spoke of. This just kind of adds to the portfolio of a vet tech so that they might find employment other places as well. So I don't see that it's probably causing any problem in it. And it could be needed if we've already got the technicians around. Could be needed if you've got, just as was spoken of with spaying cows, a vet tech that's competent in that might want to work for another veterinarian, and it'd be good to have credentials that say that they can, you know, they can do that as well. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Nichols.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, relying on and against this bill. Folks, I think this is law for law's sake. And to come down here and to pass a law that really has no cause other than recognizing a technician, I think is not the appropriate thing to do. And then two more things about this bill. It requires rulemaking, so that theoretically then the board will define whatever the rules are. But the chances of them then defining what a technician can and can't do as part of that bill will likely be the natural progression of it. So we're giving authority to the board to designate what a technician can and can't do. And then if you have someone who is not a certified tech as adopted by their rules, that person or or the vet who is working with that person is guilty of a misdemeanor and 6 months in jail and $750 fine, because that's it on penalties on page 5. So if we're going to pass laws that say it's a misdemeanor, you can go to jail for 6 months if you're practicing as a tech or saying you're a tech because we say that you need a tech, but we don't know what the tech is. We don't know how long they're going to be there. We don't know what the restrictions are and what they can do other than perhaps having a plaque on the wall. That just doesn't make sound like good government to me.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really have no dog in this fight, but I didn't mean to use a metaphor like that when speaking of a veterinary bill, but I was in the committee, and I listened to the testimony, and part of what the good veterinarian from across the hall continued to mention was essentially that this was in some way modeled after the way medical practices are done. If a person receives a 2-year degree, some sort of diploma, that they should receive some sort of recognition of that diploma. And if they continue in their education, of course, they move on up. And this was simply a way to recognize that and to help us also to maintain a sort of reciprocity with 35 other states. And so I just wanted to give that as some measure of clarification based on what I heard the other day. Thank you.
Representative Northrup.
I guess I do have a little beef with this. I don't think that we should handicap a veterinarian by having him have a vet tech help him out all the time. A lot of the veterinarians pick up, as the chairman of education has said, pick up people to give him a hand. It could even be one of my employees. It could be somebody he brought out with him. And I just hate to see a vet feel like now he has to be getting a vet tech to help him do that kind of work.
Representative Zawanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're living in a different world nowadays with these pet animals. And so you have people who their whole world revolves around their dog or their cat. And if something were to happen to one of these animals under the care of a veterinarian or a vet tech, it really comes back to liability. And so I think the impetus of the bill, and this isn't something we just brought this year. You've seen this in a bill we've tried the last 2 years that didn't make it through because we had 5 or 6 other positions in these. And so this is just for vet techs only. But it really deals with the reciprocity issue that other states are licensing these. There are requirements. There is education. And it's really because we live in a new world where people take their dogs and cats very seriously in their health, and they're more than happy to sue veterinarians in these days or anybody who works or may mishandle their pet. And so I understand nobody likes practice acts, but that's really how this bill came about and why it's pretty much needed. If not this year, I mean, it's going to keep coming back because there is a desire in the industry to get Wyoming where these other states are and work on this problem. And it really deals with the reciprocity issue and people move here from other states or our people are moving to a different state on if they have to requalify themselves or not. So that's, I think, the impetus of the bill is it's a liability, it's a reciprocity. These are the issues that are coming up in today's society, and we need stuff like this nowadays.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against this bill, I haven't heard a compelling reason why the government needs to be involved with an issue like this. There doesn't seem to be any true reason for it other than, these people have a degree and they want some kind of government recognition. I mean, their degree is their recognition. I mean, I've got a college degree and I don't have a government certification to go along with it to pat me on the back. So I don't see that as a good reason. And as far as just because other states are doing it, I don't see that as a good reason either. Some states, in my business, you know, selling motorcycles and ATVs, there are states that require a salesman to have to get a government license before he's allowed to sell motorcycles and ATVs. Is that where we want to go, where every single job you have to ask the government permission before you're allowed to have it? I just don't see any compelling safety reason for this. I don't see a need for it, so I would encourage you to vote against it.
Chairman Sumlich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There were some questions about what what would be prohibited or what would be exempted, or whether a person who is, you know, doing this kind of work, what would be required or not required. And in 33-3203, it does talk about a person who is a regular student in a College of Veterinary Medicine. A person who is responsible working with a veterinarian or licensed veterinarian during a school vacation period. It says any veterinarian, aide, nurse, laboratory technician, intern, or other employee of a licensed veterinarian from administering medication or rendering auxiliary or supporting assistance. So I think the point here is that it would not, you know, this doesn't set up a standard people can't continue to, you know, to do some of the things that's already, you know, provided for in the Act. So those are some of the exceptions that we have. So, I'll just go back and say that there's different ways that people who are working as veterinarians can be certified, and you know, I think it's something that they want. I think the good vice chair of the Ag did mention that there'd be opportunities for them to have reciprocity in other states. And I actually did get an email from someone who was had a relative who was a vet tech, and one of the reasons that they when they come to Wyoming, who his wife is a vet tech, just thought there would be better employment opportunities and perhaps a little better pay schedule that could be established if there was a certification, so you know, in the state. So that was the reason why they would support us doing that. So with that, I just ask for your support of the bill. Thank you.
Any further discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Simlick's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 89 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. Having failed a standing vote pursuant to H.R. 6-6B, the chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
No.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
No.
Flickery.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
No.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell. Kennedy,
aye.
Coleman,
no.
Connolly,
no.
Davison,
no.
Davison,
no.
Eklund,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Filer,
aye.
Freeman,
no.
Gay, excused, Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
no.
Greer,
no.
Green.
No.
Halverson.
No.
Harshman. Harshman. Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Hutchings.
Aye.
Yagi.
No.
Hutchings. Hutchings, no. Hutchings, no. Yagi.
No.
Kasparic.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
No.
Croker.
No.
Crone.
No.
Larson.
No.
Lockhart.
No.
Laux.
No.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
Aye.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
No.
Northrup.
No.
Patton.
No.
Paxton.
Aye.
Petroff. Pieperinen.
No.
Reeder.
No.
Semlick.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Stubson.
No.
Teeters.
No.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace, excused. Walters, excused. Watt, excused. Wilson.
Excuse.
Wilson, excused. Winters.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
Harshman. Harshman, excused. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 22 aye, 32 no, 6 excused.
Pursuant to H.R. 6-6B, Senate File 89, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 5. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File number 5 from the Corporations Committee, an act relating to insurance, creating specialty limited lines, producer license requirements, expanding limited lines insurance regulation, providing for regulation of group and master property and casualty insurance policies, providing definitions, providing for fees, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred Senate File 5, engrossed, Insurance Limited Lines, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye are Representatives Berger, Blickery, Byrd, Gay, Green, Kirkbride, Paxton, Petroff, and Dan Zwanzer, signed by Representative Berger, Chairman.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to take a moment before I move the other bill here just to introduce some friends from Sheridan. As you know, I haven't had anyone come down from up north, and so we have the Leadership Sheridan Group visiting us today, getting to know the Capitol, and if you would stand, and welcome to the People's House. Thank you very much for visiting us.
Welcome to the House.
All right, Mr. Chairman, I move Senate File 5 and ask for your favorable consideration, and the good Vice Chairman Blickery will explain the bill for you.
Representative Blickery.
Mr. Chairman, fellow representatives, happy Valentine's Day. This is the kind of bill that you should have on Valentine's Day because you're just going to love it. This bill is sponsored by the Joint Corporations Committee, and we actually have worked on this for 2 years. 2 years ago, the people who do the kind of insurance that you buy with your cell phone came, and they wanted to work and actually be part of the insurance commissioner's purview. But the insurance commissioner asked us to incorporate all the different kinds of limited lines in this bill, so we worked on it this entire last year. Now, limited lines are, as I just said, the kind of insurance that you get when you buy your cell phone. Okay, that they say, hey, do you want the insurance, or pay this much money, and we cover it for, you know, whatever they say they'll cover it for. But the other ones are the kind that you get when you rent a car. Okay, they're limited lines, specialty insurance that you only get when you purchase a service of some special type or a certain kind of item. So we worked on this for the whole year, and essentially it's what's before you is what was worked out by all the entities, the insurance commissioner's office, and the different groups that sell this kind of insurance. And I guess that's my explanation. If you have any questions, I'll try to answer them, and I have others here that can. Otherwise, call the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Berger's motion? Oh. Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have one question. I remember being on the committee that was working on this during the interim, and there was an issue of compensation for employees. Did it get worked out so that the employees are allowed to receive compensation for selling the insurance?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Blickery.
Yes, Representative, it did get worked out. It basically, the way that it states it in there is that if less than 50% of their compensation. So, and that is important because the people who employ them to sell whatever they sell want them to be able to make some money, but they don't want it to be the majority part of their compensation. Essentially what this does is it gets it so that the insurance commissioner can work out with the insurance salesman rules that fit everybody. Anything else? Okay.
Is there any further discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Berger's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate file number 5 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. Senate file 5 has passed committee of the whole. Majority Floor Leader Brown.
Mr. Chairman, please move Senate File 36 down and put it after Senate File 64.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 73. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 73 from the Labor Committee, an act relating to unemployment compensation, providing that an employer's account should not be relieved of benefit charges for an erroneous payment caused by the employer's failure to provide requested information as specified, providing definitions, amending the penalty assessment on fraudulently received benefits, making conforming amendments, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred Senate File 73 engrossed, Unemployment Insurance Federal Compliance, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Barlow, Coleman, Filer, Green, Harvey, Kasperic, Larson, Throne, and Wilson, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harvey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate file number 73 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the standing committee amendment. And I'll explain the amendment first. If you go to page 5 of your bill, it's talking about the communication between the Department of Workforce Services and the employer. And one of the things that was a problem was notification being received by the employer. And so we deleted mailed, because that could be postal or it could be electronic mail. So we inserted sent by United States mail or electronically. And then on page 5, line 12, or by electronic communication by United States mail or electronically. So it just clarified that electronic, it clarified how that mail would happen. And so without further question, I would ask question on the standing committee amendment.
Question having been called, all those in favor of standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate File 73, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 73 has been adopted. We're back to the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to turn this over to Representative Green to explain the bill.
Representative Green.
All right. Brothers and sisters of the 62nd, this has to do with workforce services on the Senate file. And what we're trying to do here is comply with federal regulations and make sure we comply with the Employment Security Fund. So essentially, if you look at page 3, with that fund going from the 5% to the 20%, the 5% will still go to outreach and education. That is outreach and education that Department of Workforce Services conducts. The 15% is to comply with the federal regulations going to the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund. And that's just a federal requirement for us to comply with, and that is why we are jumping from the 5% to the 20%. So the 5% will still be the state portion for the outreach and education. The 15% is so we can comply with the federal guidelines. And just bear with me for a second here as I look over the bill again. I apologize. If you go to page 4, the oftentimes representatives of businesses do not respond, do not reply to the Department of Workforce Services. So that's why we added in that Romanette little I to make sure that businesses start complying with the Department of Workforce Services. And the reason we don't do certified mail is that so many of these go out, it becomes cost prohibitive to do it by certified mail. And some issues are raised within to make sure that there is notification. And one of the small business employers over the interim has raised concerns with Department of Workforce Services not conducting proper notification. So they are working on that internally as a department. As that concern was raised to them, they were ignorant to that concern. So that was raised. And then we did put in the timely to make sure it was defined. And it is now 15 days after the notice or request is sent out to make sure there is a clear set definition for when timely is, so when the businesses have to respond to workforce services on this issue. And I see a question being raised, and I will stand for that question.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question along the lines of notice. I noticed that it gives exception if they don't respond in time. Is there any way to show that they received the notice? Because I'm just thinking, you know, what if it was sent to the wrong email address? There's no really receipt, you know, there's no way to prove that they received it kind of thing. And just want to make sure a business is covered for honest mistakes like that.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the reason we put electronically in there is that as technology goes forward, that's not the current practice of workforce services. Workforce services will continue to mail, but as technology evolves, we thought it would be less burdensome upon us as a legislature to have to readdress the whole issue. So they are currently using snail mail for all their correspondences. And then we brought up the question about certified mail, but it would become too cost prohibitive regarding how many mailings they actually do in a given week. So that's why we actually do mail, and our concern was what happens if they didn't receive the mail, and they are working on that process. I'll stand for any other questions on the bill.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 73 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 73 passes Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 64. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 64, presented by Senator Coe, an act relating to alcohol licensing, limiting non-resident interest in wholesale licenses for sale of malt beverages, providing exceptions, providing for a temporary license, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, the Committee Number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred Senate File 64, Wholesale Malt Beverage Distributor Limitations, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blickery, Eklund, Goggles, Laux, Madden, Northrup, Petroff, Simlick, one no vote, Representative Kirkbride, signed by Representative Madden, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Madden?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, you do so with the recommendation the bill, Senate File 64 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And, Mr. Chairman, if it's all right, I'll explain the amendment. I think it works better to get this amendment inputted into the system now, and then I'll also move the Committee of the Whole amendment after that, because it's a correction to the, or an addition to the Standing Committee amendment. Mr. Chairman, the Standing Committee amendment deals with a very important, or a couple of important issues. One important issue is that the issue of limiting who can have distributorships, who can own a distributorship, was couched around in-state and out-of-state in the original language. And of course, that interfered with the Interstate Commerce Clause. And it wasn't what they really wanted to do was to limit the ownership by breweries rather than dealing with residents or non-residents. That wasn't a critical thing. So everywhere you see in the original bill where non-resident appears, that's been deleted. Okay? And that occurs throughout, including in the title, and so that's one part of it. The other, another part deals with some vague language on page 2, line 11. And page 2, line 11, it said, malt beverage importer may have any interest in whole or in part, directly or indirectly. And some of the issues raised there was interest. Does that mean participating in advertising promotions and things like that? And of course, that wasn't what we're after. What we really were looking for is that they wouldn't have any ownership interest. So you'll see that on line 11, we insert legal ownership, and then we also delete it directly and indirectly because that didn't make any sense once we talked about legal ownership. So that's another one. And then the final one is Romanet I, or Romanet 3. There it says, nothing in this subsection shall be interpreted to impair any contract between a brewery, malt beverage manufacturer, or malt beverage importer, and a distributor. So that's put in there at the request of both distributors and brewers, just to make sure that that's highlighted and we're not upsetting any existing contracts. So if there's no questions on the Standing Committee Amendment 1, I would move the question.
Representative Crone, do you have a question on the Standing Committee? Questioning having been called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 64, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 64 is adopted. We are back on the bill. Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The other Committee of the Whole bill, and I would move Committee of the Whole bill number 1 and explain the Committee of the Whole amendment number 1 to Senate File 64, and I'll explain the Committee of the Whole amendment. What we found after we put the Standing Committee amendment in was that there's no place in the statutes where there's such a thing as a malt beverage manufacturer. So every time that name came up, we took it out, and really a malt beverage manufacturer is nothing more than a brewer. So that's all that one does, and if there's no questions on that, I would move the call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 64, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. Back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'll turn it over to Representative Crone, the co-sponsor, to explain the bill. Thank you.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring before the body this afternoon a pro-Wyoming small business bill. Senate File 64 attempts to place in line with malt beverages what we currently have in place for wine and spirits in the state of Wyoming. And that's commonly referred to as a three-tier system. The three-tier system has been part of the operation of alcohol distribution in our country since the 21st Amendment to the Constitution was passed. And it basically divides the distribution of alcohol into three categories: manufacturers, distributors, and retailers. Right now, currently under Wyoming state law, we have a three-tier system for wine and spirits. So either the distiller or winery is the manufacturer. The state of Wyoming actually is the wholesale distributor. And then we have the retail liquor establishment. So what are the benefits of a three-tier system? Basically, it prevents abuse of one owner having control over all three levels. So it prevents a monopoly, and it prevents someone from fixing prices as a result of that monopoly. It also, and we've seen it in our existing wine and spirits three-tier system, provides better prices and better variety for the consumer. In addition, there is a state benefit and state interest in the three-tier system in that we know when taxes are paid, and we're able to monitor that revenue being presented to the state in a more efficient fashion. So this actual bill basically sets up that same system for malt beverages. It would prevent a large a large brewery oftentimes that are not even based in this country from coming in and having any ownership interest in this local distributorships across the state. Now, the committee heard testimony from local distributors who say that right now it's very difficult to work with these larger corporations, these larger breweries. It's tough to pass on this ownership interest from family members to family members, and this would provide those small business owners in Wyoming another source of protection. In addition, it does provide a little bit of recourse, or actually quite a bit of recourse, for a brewery if something happens with a distributor. If the distributor goes bankrupt, if a distributor goes out of business, it allows for a temporary license for those large breweries. So, ladies and gentlemen of the House, I think you need to look at this bill as a comparison of a big brewery versus local small-town business, and this helps protect those businesses. With that, I would answer any questions.
Any discussion on the bill? Representative Zwanitzer.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Chairman, just wondering, question, what the impetus of the bill was and why is it before us, and if other states have taken these steps. I didn't hear quite an explanation of why we need the bill or if there's a current problem.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Four other states have taken this action. Those four states have seen problems where large breweries have come in and taken over distributorships, basically made those distributorships more difficult for the local folks to have. In one instance in a state that's celebrating Mardi Gras right now, there was an instance where a large brewery came in, took over, basically vertically integrated the business, and a lot of folks lost their jobs. So I think this is more of a preventive measure more than anything else. But to answer your question, yes, other states have done this.
Representative Greer. Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to, before session, I sat down with one of our local distributors, who's a great guy and a great member of our community and does a great job with his distributorship. But and we talked about this issue, and at the end of the conversation, I couldn't figure out why this was needed, why this is a path we wanted to go down. And I guess that's one of the questions I posed to the good co-sponsor. You know, I look at 12.9104, which is a statute in the malt beverage section that governs the relationship between manufacturers and distributors. And it looks like it's got 16 separate restrictions on what distributors, what manufacturers can do in relation to distributors. And for example, if a distributor wants to sell it, a manufacturer can't unreasonably withhold their permission to sell it. You know, there's just throughout those 16 points, different protections that distributors have. And my understanding is it's one of the most protective malt beverage distributor statutes in the entire nation. And yet now we're coming in and sort of piling on and saying, you know, further restricting the ability of these brewers and controlling the distribution of their goods. And I understand, I mean, we all love our local businesses and we want to jump in and protect them, but why do they need more protection? And why do we want to further hamstring brewers on their ability to control the distribution of their own product and who's handling it and whether they're responsible and those sorts of things?
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To answer the good representative from the central part of the state's question, I really think that Title 12, Chapter 9 that you referenced and this go hand in hand. It talks that section, the franchise section, deals more with the relationship between the brewers and the distributors and their internal relationship in terms of how they work out their agreements, how they contract, et cetera. This bill is actually works with that section to give additional protection to distributors because it allows for no ownership in those assets. So I think it goes farther, and it actually works in addition, hand in hand with the chapter. So to answer your question, it adds protection not only to distributors but also to the three-tier system.
Representative Laux.
Mr. Speaker. I just, this came out of committee, I voted in favor of it, and the more I stuck my nose into it, the more I'm confused. I really think we screwed it up back in 1920, honestly, when the 18th Amendment was passed, but those of us that believe in the free market economy, as we say, is so contrary to it. There's 54 pages in Title 12, trying to dig into that and understand why we should write more regulations to help protect other private enterprise. But it's really a screwed-up deal. So I hope there's good debate on this so you guys can help me figure out where I'm going to vote because I really don't know at the present time. Thank you.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm having a hard time following this one. I don't understand why this and why now. I've been in... And I guess I'm curious as to how this is going to affect relationship between a brewer and a distributor and help them where they've spent considerable amount of assets and dollars in having their territories and their distribution areas. And is that going to affect that negatively? When you say we're going to go to the same three-tier system, I don't know how that couldn't help but negatively affect our established distributors. So I need some help understanding this.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To answer the good representative from the county in the Bighorn Basin next to mine, I think that the protection that you were looking for was adopted in the Standing Committee Amendment. There was an amendment that was listed that said nothing in this act would in any way infringe or hinder the contract rights of the parties. So in terms of a brewer working with a distributor and how they make their arrangements in terms of distribution, market share, area, all of that will still be in place. And so all of that can still be negotiated. All of that can still be established in contract. What this bill prevents quite simply is direct ownership from a brewery in a distributorship. That's really the essence of the bill. So in terms of how they actually operate their operations, what they do, how they do it, those contract rights are still in place and still can be negotiated between the parties. So that does not change.
Representative Greer.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so some breweries have favored distributors that they prefer pick up additional territories. And so those contractual arrangements are not affected by this.
You're telling me this just strictly prohibits a brewery from owning a distributorship in the state of Wyoming?
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The short answer to that is yes. I think if you look closely at Section I on page 2, it talks specifically about just the ownership interests. If you look at the amendment that was adopted from the Standing Committee, it says explicitly contract rights. This will not affect contract rights between the parties. So this has to deal with ownership, and it has to do with preventing that monopoly that I discussed earlier. So,
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm trying to figure out why it's necessarily bad for a brewer to be able to own the distribution rights. I mean, oftentimes they might find it can save them money, can make it cheaper for the end consumer. So I guess I'd like a better explanation of why we want to prohibit them from having that ownership.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to answer both a question from a previous speaker and the most recent speaker, I think it's clear that since the 1930s, liquor's been treated differently. And basically the system of how we've treated liquor has been separate and apart from other forms of commerce. And in fact, Article 19, Section 10 of our Constitution talks specifically about the state having pretty much any authority to regulate. So as to the benefits of a three-tier system, I think the real benefits are it prevents price setting. It allows more variety for consumers in terms of what's distributed. If you have one company that owns a brewery, typically you'll only have and you had a brewery and own the distributorship, typically all you'll see consumers would see were just those products from that brewery. Under the current system, you have a wider variety of that. And finally, the state interest is through this three-tier system, it's easier to keep track of the taxation and where the money is flowing. So hopefully that answers some of your question.
Chairman Madden.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only thing I want to add here is that the purpose of the bill is to protect against vertical integration. And how that relates to Chapter 9 is that, you know, that's how breweries are dealing with distributors and how distributors deal with breweries. But if they're vertically integrated, then there's no reason for Chapter 9 because they're one and the same, okay? And the deleterious effects you get when you don't have vertical integration is that product lines, other competing products, are barred from being distributed by these independent distributors because you don't have independent distributors anymore, and the market outcomes are not enhanced when there's restraints of trade that are caused by vertical integration. So I just wanted to clear that up and why this is separate from Chapter 9.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and in favor of the amendment, or the bill as amended. I sat through one of the meetings that was held on this to kind of see what's the merits of this proposed legislation. And at least when we have a professor speak and a group of lawyers, I don't know why I'm even stepping up here. But my takeaway from that meeting was kind of what a former member of the House and now currently the leadership down the hall would say. I'm kind of in favor of Joe Sixpack. And Joe Sixpack in this case is local, and if we can help those folks with equalizing the arrangements that they have with larger corporations that may have more stroke than they can muster, and that should help our state and help Joe Sixpack. So I urge your support of the bill.
Majority Whip Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess as the discussion goes on, I'm made more and more concerned. I mean, we can put up fences around the state, I guess, and we can make sure that we only allow retailers of a certain size to operate within the state, but I don't think that necessarily does the end consumer the best good. And you know, this isn't a monopoly type of issue. Last time I went to the liquor store, there was a whole wall of different kind of beverages. It's not like we can that
if a manufacturer comes in as the distributor, that we're locked into that, because there are innumerable manufacturers of these sorts of goods. So I don't know. I'm just left with a real concern that this is not helping the end consumer very much and is really more anti-competitive than anything.
Minority Whip Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the beer drinkers that are around here that that do drink the higher-end beers, I have several constituents that are principals in microbreweries, and I see this as problematic for them being given equal footing in the distribution chain if a major competitor of theirs pretty much owns the distribution chain. So if we could address that, and I could take that back to my beer brewing friends.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll take these questions as they came in, or the statement from the good representative from the central part of the state. First of all, we're already doing this with wine and spirits. We're already in a three-tier system with wine and spirits. Secondly, this bill does not put fences up around the state. This bill would apply to in-state brewers as well. And in fact, it would just make the system more efficient. As to the microbreweries, there was testimony at the committee that the microbrewers have no objection to this bill, and in fact are in support of this bill because it could give them more options within the state of Wyoming.
I am reluctant to recognize Representative Hunt, but I will.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to say, in my position as chairman of Committee 99, I must declare a conflict on this.
I knew I was reluctant. Are there any other Representative Petroff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say that I also think that the small brewers can benefit from this, because if the distributors are owned by a large company, they're less likely to want to distribute some of our local products, whereas a local distributor can develop those relationships and provide more variety. The other thing I'd like to point out, though, is that a companion bill to this that we'll probably have to bring next year is to up the volume that a small brewer is considered a small brewer, so that if those folks want to continue to distribute on their own, that they're able to do that.
Representative Crone, anything further? Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This just came up a little quick for me. I got through it. I'm comfortable with it, and I like the bill now.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to close with a few comments. I believe this bill is good for small business, it's good for Wyoming, and it's good for Joe Sixpack. So I would urge you to support the bill. Thank you.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Madden's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report to do so with the recommendation that Senate File 64 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 64 passes Committee of the Whole.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Simlick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor.
Please go ahead.
Members of the House, I've been in this mic quite a little bit today and brought you some good bills and brought you some that maybe weren't quite as good, as I found out. But the most important thing that I can do today is make an introduction to North Gallery, the grandmother of our 11 grandchildren and the mother of our 5 children, and my wife for 44 years, Sheila. So welcome to the House.
Welcome to the House. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 36. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 36 from Senator Case, an act relating to insurance, providing for publication of summary annual financial statements on the Department of Insurance website, amending requirements for publication of summary annual statements and certificates, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, the committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 36, Engrossed Insurance Publication Requirements, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Berger, Blickery, Byrd, Gay, Green, Kirkbride, Paxton, Petroff, and Dan Swanenser, signed by Representative Berger, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Berger?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 36 do pass, and I defer to Representative Stubson to explain the bill.
Majority Whip Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 36 has its genesis in the interim work of the Corporations Committee, and we started looking at the issue of publication costs across government. And the counties, the cities, a number of folks came to us to really plead their case on the huge expenses that they face in having to do legal publications throughout the year. And that topic ended up being a huge topic, and a lot of people were interested, and the committee didn't make much progress on an overall approach. But as we heard that testimony, we learned that there were a couple of what things that we thought were low-hanging fruit, and among those are the bill, the statute 263-126 that you see before you. And what the current law is that the insurance department has to publish statistics and information related to insurance companies, and they have to do so, you can see, has to be published for 6 successive days in a daily newspaper in general circulation. And the way the insurance department has handled this is through a lottery-type system for a newspaper, and you can see that under Section C. And so you have these lists of insurance companies published, and it may not have any relationship to where their customer's at. It may be, you know, published in the northwest part of the state because of the lottery, but all their customers are in the central part of the state. It's published for 6 successive days. The testimony indicated that this was really a meaningless exercise, and it's a meaningless exercise that costs insurance companies about $600,000 a year. And so we thought, oh, well, that's easy. Everybody agrees. This doesn't make any sense. It doesn't give the consumers really any information that is helpful to them, so let's cut that requirement. And so that's what the bill looked like when it started out on the other side of the hall. You can see that the bill looks significantly different now. And what the bill does now is it basically says we'll do something slightly cheaper and slightly less meaningless than we had in the statute earlier. And so now what the statute has is it still has the publication requirement, but it is not for the 6 successive days. It is a one-time publication requirement. But it requires a list of all insurers and their NAIC number, essentially, to be published in every state every paper in the state of general circulation, and also information connected to the insurance commissioner's office so that you can go look up that company, and if you have concerns about their financing or the background, a consumer can do that. And so the way the bill comes before you now is not quite as grand a solution as we had originally envisioned, but it is an approach that significantly lessens the expense, probably from about $600,000 to $230,000 a year for insurance companies. And it provides information that at least conceivably could be of some meaning to somebody in the state. So this bill is sort of along the lines of it's better than nothing, and I would urge your support, though there is an interesting Committee of the Whole amendment to look at.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 36 and ask for its favorable passage. This is a great bill, but it certainly was a better bill before it became blue. And so what this amendment does is take the bill back to the original form, which takes out the notice to publish. And some other information that my good colleague didn't just mention, we've had this statute now, and since 2004 of this requirement of publishing, the testimony in committee on how many calls the department received in the last 9 years regarding this, zero. Not a single call in 9 years, and we've had insurance companies spending $600,000 a year on this requirement. And so just a little more background. This was going to be an interim committee bill. A member from another body stopped that in interim. Then the bill came like it was. Same member of the other body decided to add a little bit more onto it. And so now what the bill does now under its current form in the blue version, it requires newspapers to publish over 1,260 names and their insurance numbers for public consumption to possibly call regarding one of those numbers, because if you can't figure out how to get insurance, you certainly can figure out, I guess, how to use the phone number and call the insurance department based on these advertising. It just doesn't really make sense. And so I guess the frustrating thing for me, and one of my committee members can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think any of the committee really liked this version better. We all have this concern that the other body wouldn't go along with it if we amended it back. And just maybe because I've been here so long, I don't think that's a great way to do policy. I certainly have no fear of going back to a conference committee and discussing the pros and cons of this. We discussed in the interim with the other body, and I would ask you to take back to its original form. We have this weird compromise now that we're only going to have one annual list in the papers, which is about $230,000. And actually, it was interesting that the members of the group that supports newspapers came and asked for us to do it twice a year because they thought it was necessary that we actually do it twice a year. But once again, 9 years, not a single call. It's not state dollars. It's $600,000 insurance companies put forward. But when no one's using it, it makes no sense to me to even have this extra step to have to do what they were considering like a publication of putting all 1,260 names and NAIC numbers in the hopes that maybe that would stimulate someone to call on how to get insurance. I think if you don't have insurance, you figure it out pretty quick where to go, how to find it. Having a yearly publication in the newspaper doesn't somehow wake someone up that morning while reading coffee going, oh, I don't have insurance. I'm going to call one of these numbers and research this firm. So I'd ask you to vote yes on my amendment to take it back to the original bill. And if that requires us to have a conference committee with the other body, so be it. Thank you.
Representative Blickery.
Mr. Chairman, what the previous speaker didn't tell you, though, is under the present law, where these insurance companies publish is in obscure newspapers all over the state in a whole different form than what it would be under this bill. So I guess I would submit that it would be a good idea to vote this amendment down, because the way we have the bill written right now, it's a big improvement over what we had, and if we don't have any law, where we're going to be is right where we were before, where they're wasting $600,000 every year producing advertisements in obscure newspapers that are picked by lottery for them to publish them in.
Representative Northrup.
I echo the previous speaker. I also think that if you think about your hometown newspaper and wonder if it's still going to be there with the subtraction of these ads being ran, that's a question you need to ask yourself. Thank you.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. These certainly aren't obscure newspapers. These are the required newspapers. We put all public notices in, required in every other statute. These are all of our hometown newspapers of general circulation in each county. And so we have had this weird formula, lottery, however they do it, where they put certain companies in certain papers at certain times, and it wasn't working for anyone. But if this bill is just to subsidize your local newspaper, I mean, we can have a budget amendment, and we can give local newspapers in this state money. I contend to you this is a policy that hasn't had any effect. We're wasting dollars. But if the effect or the concern is somehow we're hurting our local newspapers by not basically giving them money to print these ads that have no effect in 9 years, we can find a better solution for that problem than this bill.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To my representative friend from the southwest corner, southeast corner of the state, does the amendment that you have leave intact on page 2, lines 19, the publication shall include the names of any companies that were suspended or revoked during the previous year. If that doesn't remain intact, that's a service that I think the newspaper publication provides as a public service. On and against the amendment, I think.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. Under this amendment, taking it back to the original bill, you would not be required to publish the names of the insurance companies, the state, the 1,260, those that went out over the last year. The other side of that coin is we're charging all of these insurance companies money for these advertisements, except we wouldn't be charging the ones that are defunct now for being in that as well. And so there's certainly that information on the homepage of the Department of Insurance, which the original bill still calls for, if you're interested. Certainly, if it was your insurer, you would know they were defunct. Well, I would hope you would know they were defunct. If not, the department certainly keeps that on their homepage, all the happenings of all the insurance companies. But to answer the good question posed, this does take that out.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just look at how many people in this room go to home pages. I mean, really, how many of us go to a home page of an insurance company? We buy insurance. We trust our agents. But there are a lot of ways, but there. What I'm trying to get at, and not doing it very well, is that I'm strongly opposed to this amendment because I think there are a lot of people that do get the majority of their information from their local newspaper. There are a lot of people that the day, and there's quite a few weekly papers that come out, some that come out 3 days a week, some come out 2 days a week. There are a lot of people that's the highlight of their week is to sit down and read the paper cover to cover, and that's where they get their information. And I think the electronic age is coming, but I think there's enough of us that don't live in that world yet that I still think we need our hometown newspapers and we still need to be able to get that information from our newspapers.
Representative Kroger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would submit that virtually no one is waiting for the newspaper to come out so they can read an annual financial statement that's published in the legal section. If they truly are waiting for that information, they can write the insurance company and get it. They can write the insurance commissioner and have it mailed to them. The information's available in other ways. We had this discussion when we were talking about things that were required to be published in newspapers this summer when we studied this in the interim. And the compelling reason to leave things in the newspaper was if they were timely. If it is there's a sale, you know, a sale next week or a zoning hearing next week, that was timely information. An annual financial statement from an insurance company is not timely information. If anybody really needs that information and they have to wait a couple of weeks for it to be mailed to them, it doesn't cost them any opportunity or any benefit, and they can still get the information in writing other than electronically. So this is a good bill, and I would ask that you support it.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we are on the committee of the whole amendment number one, and I would ask you to vote no on that amendment. I think that this has been a really good discussion. I learned quite a bit from the presentation in corporations, and the misinterpretation is that not every newspaper publishes that list of insurance companies and their number. It's on a rotation basis. So not all small newspapers are going to have this list. It's in a rotation. It could be once every 3 years, once a year, something on that order. So I think the discussion that continued is that this is an improvement in efficiency and transitioning people into the use of a website that would actually be more current and accurate on the information about insurance companies. And another great idea that could come forth in another amendment is that we use some of these funds that the insurance agency division has in order to do public announcements and to work on other areas that really do affect our communities and our insurees. That would be much more beneficial than a phone number or an identification number of an insurance company. So I look forward to tomorrow, and please defeat this amendment.
Majority Floor Leader Brown.
Mr. Chairman, look, this is simple.
If you want to subsidize newspapers with somebody else's money, then vote against this amendment. If it's not about newspapers, it's about notices, then vote for this amendment, because nobody reads the legal notices. I can tell you as a lawyer, nobody reads them, except a few nerds like me.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I certainly agree with all the comments said. I don't think the blue bill is an improvement, and the system that was proposed in the other body is going to make any difference. But if there's a way that we can come back on second or third reading and make it work and do something that's not just publishing 1,260 names and numbers in the paper and making it actually do something that people will call, I mean, that is the intent of the what the statute says now, is really to get people to make sure they know what their insurance company is doing and help them find insurance. But the current system we have now certainly isn't working, as evidenced of not a single call in 9 years. I don't think the solution that the other body came up with is a workable solution, but perhaps in the next 2 days we can all come to some consensus and find something that will be actually meaningful and beneficial. I think it'd be easier to do that if we go back to the white copy and would ask you to vote for my amendment. But either way, I bet you'll see a second reading amendment tomorrow.
Any further discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment number one? Question having been called, all those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number one to Senate File 36 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. The chair is no longer in doubt. Committee of the Whole Amendment number one has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Berger's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 36 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. It passes the Committee of the Whole. Senate File 36 passes the Committee of the Whole. Majority Floor Leader Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. All those opposed, no. Motion carries.
Reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, the Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg to leave report as follows. Senate Bill 7, amended. Recommended do pass. Senate File 22, recommended do pass. Senate File 31, amended. Recommended do pass. Senate File 70, following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. Senate File 5, recommended do pass. Senate File 73, amended. Recommended do pass. Senate File 64, amended. And further amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 36, amended. Recommended do pass. Signed by Representative Somers, Chairman.
Representative Somers.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report and would like to thank the good lawyer from the other side of the mountain for his noticing my tie. Thank you.
Yeah, heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Congratulations, Representative Summers. Committee of the Whole reports adopted. Representative Summers, you left your correspondence up here at the desk. We're at that order of business of messages from the governor and or Senate.
Message number 289, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 65, Municipal Solid Waste Landfill Remediation, a House bill listed above, passed on third reading in an amended form. And it was ayes 28, noes 2. The Senate respectfully asked the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments signed by Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 290. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 71, the Omnibus Water Bill of Planning, ayes 29, noes 0. And there was one conflict, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 291, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 102, hospitalization of mentally ill persons. The House bill listed below, above, passed on third reading in amended form. It was ayes 29, noes 1. The Senate respectfully asked the House to concur by adopting the listed amendment, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 292, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 156, Movement of Livestock in Emergency Situations. The House bill listed above passed on third reading, ayes 30. The Senate respectfully asked the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 293, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated, House Bill 188, Investment of Public Funds, dash Interest-Bearing Deposits, ayes 30, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 294, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 216, Deadly Weapons in a Courtroom. House bill listed above passed on third reading, ayes 28, noes 2. The Senate respectfully asked the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 295, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 69, Highway Funding, ayes 18, noes 12. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 296, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below failed to pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 172, School Districts, Leasing of Capital Assets, ayes 12, noes 18. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 297, concurrence passed. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill number 43, failure to extinguish or contain a fire. Ayes 27, noes 2, one excused. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
With that order of business of reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 75 engrossed, Honor Farm Horse Program, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Simlick, Winters, Danswanitzer, signed by Representative Simlick, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 90 engrossed, Administrative Control of Acquired Institutional Lands, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Simlick, Winters, Danswanitzer, signed by Representative Simlick, Chairman.
With that order of business of signing of enrolled acts, the first enrolled act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act 38, being original House Bill 69.
Enrolled Act Number 38 from Original House Bill Number 69, an act relating to revenue for transportation purposes.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 38 being Original House Bill 69. I have so signed. Congratulations, Chairman Madden. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act 39 being Original House Bill 71.
Enrolled Act Number 39 from Original House Bill Number 71, an act relating to water development projects.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 39 being Original House Bill 71. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act Number 40 being Original House Bill 188.
Enrolled Act Number 40 from Original House Bill Number 188, an act relating to public funds.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 40 being Original House Bill 188. I have so signed. We're at the next order of business is committee announcements. Chairman Swanitzer.
Sir. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet in about 15 minutes in H-17 to consider one bill, Senate File 110, registration fees, trailers with living quarters.
Vice Chairman Green.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Labor Committee number 10 will meet tomorrow, Friday, February 15th, immediately upon noon recess to discuss Senate File 103, electronic cigarettes, Senate File 48, medical assistance, hospice care.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee number 9 will meet tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock to consider interim topics.
Committee number 12, Rules, will meet immediately upon adjournment in room 302 to discuss the revisers bill. Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 3, Revenue, will not meet tomorrow.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. Chairman Davison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources will meet at 8:30 tomorrow morning to go over interim study topics.
All right, anyone else? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. Squeaker. General file tomorrow is on the yellow list. Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 10 o'clock a.m. tomorrow, February 15, 2013.
And Mr. Majority Floor Leader, it's your intention to adjourn at or near noon?
It is my intention to adjourn at noon tomorrow, Mr. Speaker, which means we might not have any general file at all. We will adjourn at noon.
You've heard the motion. All in favor of adjourning until tomorrow, February 15th, 2013 at 10 a.m., say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The House is adjourned until tomorrow, February 15th, 2013 at 10 a.m.